Great Base Tennis Podcast. I'm Steve Smith along with Yvonne Oseretz.
Hello, hello.
Great to have you, Yvonne. Yvonne's been behind the camera, but as you could tell, he should be in front of the camera. Great to have him at the table.
Thank you.
Let's do this first. We're going to have him tell us a little bit of what he thinks about Wintergreen, Virginia, Wintergreen Resort. I think one positive for me, it's helping me with my bad posture because I keep looking up at the beautiful mountains. I think another thing is I could really help out the business. Say Bob Hope.
Bob Hope.
My father had Bob Hope's nose, a late great comedian, and I think they could use my nose as a ski slope. Another thing is I have seen five bears. How many have you seen?
Two.
Two, so I'm winning. Five.
Yeah,
two,
you're up by three.
And what are your thoughts of Wintergreen?
It's beautiful. I mean, the trees, I haven't seen so many trees. Our trip up here, I mean, we drove from Florida up to Virginia here a couple times actually. And, you know, going up through Florida, it's a little bit dry. And then you hit, you know, Georgia and it's like, oh, okay, some trees. And you hit South Carolina and then North Carolina. It's like, okay, bigger trees. Now you're in Virginia. And then it's amazing. We're up in the mountains and trees. You can, fresh air, you can smell it. It's, yeah, friendly bears.
Yeah, as I said on the Greg Patton, he was here to do a clinic with his sister and his brother-in-law, Colleen, Steve Campbell. I said, yeah, we're in Switzerland. I've taught tennis over 30 countries. I've always said, you know, I could live in Switzerland. So I tease and go, yeah, now I'm here. With Yvonne, I met Yvonne several years ago. He came to a tennis camp. Story behind that, I said to him, hey, kid, when you graduate from college, if you want to work in tennis, let me know. Certainly has a tennis connection from Southern Cal, has played tennis. Tell us a little bit about his background. Beautiful Southern Cal. It's right by the old Vic Braden Tennis College, Corte de Casa.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, you know, years ago, you would tell someone, you got to take the job, take it for 2 years. That was back in the day. Back on your resume years ago, if you worked someplace 1 year, that just wasn't right. You needed to at least be there for 2 years. He's been doing so many things for us. With, I think, Dennis Vandermeer years ago, the founder of the PTR, he hired Dan Santorum, a young Dan Santorum. And all these years later, I mean, Dan Santorum is still with the PTR and done so many amazing things with that organization. We're going to talk about that tonight. Like how we would like to make Great Base an organization. Yvonne, I've taught you a few things, taught you to play piano. Taught you how to speak Russian.
Yeah.
Yvonne was there to hold my hand when I had to go to the hospital several months ago. With Southern Cal, Yvonne, what would you like to say about the Great Base just to kick us off here?
Great Base. Wonderful. I mean, I wish I knew the information sooner. It's something I wish every tennis kid starting off knows, and that's what we want to try and get done with the Great Base. Now that it is a nonprofit, Great Base Tennis Education, we want to get the information out there to more kids. Great Base, your homework that you've done, it's on all these coaches and all this information is amazing. I changed my game. A little bit about me. When I was 21 years old, so a bit late, I went down to an academy down in Southern California. Well, I was living there in Southern California, Advantage Tennis Academy. And I met a few players that you were connected with and they introduced me. They said, hey, check out this website, because I was all wrong in my swings. And I was probably as far off as you can be. And I checked it out and, you know, light bulb moment, like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. And since then, I've just been committed to, you know, for my own game, a little bit of to change my game, to try and get better. Love the sport, so I always try and sneak in a little time to get better myself. And since then, like you said, I graduated college with a degree in computer science from UCSD. And I was looking for a job for 6 months out of college. Couldn't find one. And I believe Hurricane Ian, I think, hit Florida. And I called you up. I said, hey, are you all right? Is everything good down there? I heard the hurricane, blah, blah, blah. And you said, yeah, we're good. And hey, if you're if you're still looking for a job, you come on down. Remember, we talked about that. And I said, of course. And I packed my bags and started helping you out.
For their listeners, and I know we have listeners overseas, the acronym for the university, U.S.
University of California, San Diego, UCSD.
All right. And a degree in computer science.
Yes, sir.
And how do you find my computer skills?
It's hard to find anybody with worse computer skills.
Jeez. Yeah. I've got some notes, and let me go through one section of the notes and then you can chime in. Our podcast tonight is commercial. We usually never talk about money. I guess never. Maybe this is the first time. I shouldn't use the word maybe. I'm telling kids all the time, don't use the word maybe. Don't use the word probably. Great base. It's a pathway. It's a curriculum. It's a system of systems. Perhaps we should have used the name solid fundamentals. It's education of life, education of tennis. It's carrying the tennis court, carrying the torch. Let me get some water here. It's not that I'm nervous.
No, you're never nervous. Ice in the veins.
Never say never. Carry the torch of tennis teachers from the past. I was talking to Andy Fitzell just today. It's not Andy Fitzell and Steve Smith stuff. I've heard that so many times, Steve Smith stuff. With anything come to your mind other than that, defining the great base?
No, I over the course of a couple of years since I've known about the great base, it's unfortunate that it's such an underground community, I'd say, of people that really adopt it and want to support it and grow it and give it out to more people. But people say the great base, like, do you do the great base? And I love the way you put it when people talk about the great base as, no, it's not, it's a pathway, it's a curriculum, it's a program, it's not an academy. Don't come here to hit balls, laugh and giggle. There's information and it's online, fortunately, and thankfully it's online for free for people to listen to. And that's what it's all about. It's, you've done your homework and you put it out there. And, like you say, I love how you give credit to everybody where it's like most of the stuff, almost all of it, you say 95% is just researched and homework. And you have some original thoughts, which, are also great. And it's just the honesty is what I really appreciate about the great base. And that's what I had to say on that.
What are your thoughts when you know that people call it a cult?
It's unfortunate, but I can't say I can't see where it's coming from, where players, and I've heard you speak to this, where people come up to you, parents sometimes, it's like, yeah, we're at tournaments and we see this one player, and then you come up right up to him and you say, yeah, you know Steve Smith, and boom, and they just know you based off of the way you swing at the ball. And I love how you say how that's actually a negative towards tennis overall, because that just means that it's taught so many different ways. And when you bring up such analogies to different sports like golf, and you've been getting me into golf a little bit, I was a one sport wonder where I was just tennis, and you've been, you know, trying to get me to branch out. I've been watching golf, and it's amazing. I mean, golf, basketball, just the first two things in my head, people, players, athletes that practice those for hours and hours, they just do the same thing over and over and over and over. It's all about technique. And you don't see two different coaches teaching how to throw basketball two different ways. You don't see golf swings taught two different ways. It's from what I understand, it's just one way. In tennis, you go to a tournament, every court, someone has a different forehand, someone's serving different. And it's like, man, and it's unfortunate that nobody really, there's no true starting ground from which people develop from. And yeah.
Well, let's go back. You're from Southern Cal, and I wouldn't say that you're one sport. I know that you surf.
Yeah.
And there's two boys that we know quite well that you've taken surfing. And actually, they've won the first three rounds at Kalamazoo, which is, for our overseas listeners, it's the boys' 18s and 16s national junior tennis tournament. Mm-hmm. And what I used for a chuckle is for tennis parents, I said, yeah, I haven't been fortunate enough to meet Yvonne's parents, say his mother in this case, And obviously they've done an outstanding job. But I said, this is what Yvonne's mother does. She goes to the beach when he's surfing and she's jumping up and down. She's going, no, no, Yvonne, not that wave. It's too big. It's too big. Are there any moms in the surfing world? Are there tennis moms? We have tennis parents. Do we have tennis moms in the surfing world?
Surfing. Yeah, it's great sport. Peaceful. I'd say it's almost, in some ways, it's the opposite of tennis because ground and water. But I'd say it's very similar because once you're on the wave, you're just, it's nothing. You're thinking about nothing but the wave and it's peaceful and it's calm. And you can get into that kind of flow state with tennis as well. But with surfing, I started when I was young. I started middle school, joined a team. I competed a little bit. I was never great or excited. I just loved being out in the water. Something about it, just the tranquility. With the tournaments that you'd go to, you wouldn't see tennis, you wouldn't see parents, like tennis parents, nowadays with surfing. There are surfing parents where they go to the beach, but just because of the way the beach is so tranquil. And again, I'm not a huge surfer and I don't know much about this. I just know from my experiences. And there are a handful of crazy, you know, surfing parents that, you know, mainly it's the dads from what I remember from my childhood. It's the dads are really heavy, and especially if the kids has some potential and is surfing well when they're younger, they're pushing and pushing and pushing. And but the culture is just of surfing is so relaxed. It's you're out there and it's, yes, I'm competing against you, but we're out here surfing on waves. I mean, it's amazing, you know, and it doesn't matter. It's perfect waves or horrible waves. The weather is great. The weather is bad. The water is freezing or it's warm. It's like everyone's out there early in the morning. They do it because they love it. And you can just see in everybody's eyes. It's just love it and love it and love it. And I mean, it's tough. It's a different community than tennis for sure.
I think of servers, I think of asking questions about sharks. I was a full-fledged tennis bum by 1975. I believe that's the year the movie Jaws came out. My mother came to visit me. And, I mean, up to that point, I would go to the beach and I thought it was just the lake that I grew up on. Okay, let's go see how far out we could swim and then come back. And at that time, shark mania between Miami and Jacksonville, and that's back in the day of newspapers. You're part of Gen Z, so yeah. I have to remind you what a newspaper was. So I guess they did it with infrared cameras, and they would have the count of the number of sharks that were among the swimmers between Miami and Jacksonville. I always tease and say, ever since I saw that movie, I've never even taken a bath. I like take showers.
That's great.
But Josh, have you been in the water and seen a shark?
No, the closest I've been to sharks, I mean, I've had some encounters where, you know, just before I came to a beach, people said there was a shark. Just after I left, people said there were sharks. Down in Dana Point in Southern California, there's often great whites just swimming off the coast. And what they do is they know when the season comes around and when they're going to be hanging around the coast. And usually when it's a bit warmer water, and they go out specifically to prevent strategies that's happening. They go out and just feed the great whites, just throw out meat out there. And so they're happy and they just go along their ways. Another thing that happened with sharks is I went to Hawaii, fortunately, a couple times, and Hawaii is famous for having, you know, sharks and incidents with surfers and such. And I remember one of the first times we went to one of the islands. I don't quite remember which island. We go out to the beach, the closest beach we have, and it just says, can't go into the water. There are sharks. It's just like, okay, that's interesting.
Dana Point, beautiful place. I was a full-fledged tennis bum living in a van. And I didn't believe Brandon Fallon, great guy. He lives in Dana Point, which is a beautiful place. With back to the Great Base, sharks. Watch out for sharks. Purpose, mission, tennis. Make tennis instruction more accessible and less expensive. Make tennis instruction more accessible and less expensive. Here's another thought. Have more Americans playing American college tennis. Mm. I'm all for foreign players coming over. Where would we be in college tennis without the foreigners? But again, I think these numbers from 2 years ago, 60% for the women, 62% for the men, foreign players. Yeah. So the next thing I have down is a purpose, a mission. It's a great base is just trying to help tennis. With a review, we have 15 years daily Facebook posts. There's 5 online courses. Each course has a company test, so a certification, if you will. 500 plus Instagram posts, 150 plus podcasts. Yvonne mentioned that we're a nonprofit. We've been a nonprofit for a year, and really have to say what the lawyer told me. It cost almost 3 times as much to get it to go through the fees with a lawyer than the money we've raised. We've raised $5,000 in the first year, but we haven't made one phone call basically. And the only thing that we've done is had an attachment on a Facebook post.
Yeah.
So zero effort on our part. The lawyer's advice to me when I became a nonprofit, she certainly very intelligent lady. She knew my age. And when you took me to the hospital, my joke was, is that, geez, I went in, I thought I was 28, but they told me I was 68. But with that I should not set up a nonprofit. I should sell the content. And then she warned me of the difficulties. And I certainly have a little bit of an understanding of the difficulty of raising funds, fundraising. What are your thoughts on her comment on that?
Well, it's, she has her own experiences and she's probably doing what's in her mind the best for her client, which would be you. And if she's trying to raise or just trying to either save or make the most money so you're most well off, I think that is her job. And nothing, it's no fault of anybody and not accusatory at all. But what I think makes the great base and the information so precious and is that it is a nonprofit and it is for free out there. And the information is for anybody. And some people might say, I've heard this, that because it's for free, that means it must not be good. And unfortunately, that narrative is so misunderstood. And it's just, if you just take a look at just the first front page, you'll realize how wrong that is. I mean, I wrote down here that I feel like the strength in the great base, especially on the social media aspect, is what you like to say is that the number of followers is organic. We haven't paid for a single advertisement. All the followers, everyone that follows our content, it's because they know, it's word of mouth and people just know and trust and understand. And that's what's great about it. That's what I think is why it's a gem. And I think you made the right decision, obviously, or else I, you know, don't know where I'd be here, but I enjoy being here. I enjoy trying to make Great Base better and provide more, like you said, more educational content out there and spread it online.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Jeff Lewis, a longtime tennis teacher. Now he started with us, you know, I mean, he was maybe 14, 15 years old, taught him to hit a tennis ball and to teach. And he's actually somebody who had the opportunity to spend some time with Vic in the latter stages of his life. But Jeff, he gave me that advice. He said, best thing about it is it's organic.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't bought followers and how that all really works is not really something I am in tune with. But coming back to the lawyers, I said, you know, I remember having many discussions with Andy Fitzell on this, is that really the YouTube tennis guru, people have listened to our podcast. I've discovered the 7 secrets of the serve. Here are 4. Give me your credit card by midnight and I'll give you the other 3.
Yeah.
A little bit tacky, sleazy, Charlie Hustle. How's it go? The snake oil salesman. But a few things. Vic Braden, master plan. Vic used to always say there should have been a master plan. And I was, you know, so flattered that, you know, he's telling me, using the pronoun, this is what we should have done. And certainly hindsight's 2020. I remember being with Jeff Lewis one time when Jeff said, well, Vic, didn't you ever think about having a certification program? And he did at one point where it was called the USTA, United States Tennis Academy. It was a written exam, but he never got into the membership side of it and insurance and you know, really with the PTR, USPTI, that have both organizations in my notes. I'll say a few other things about that. But with the training, the educating of tennis teaching pros, you know, certification is not education. But with Vic, coming back, he said we should have had a master plan. And when Vic passed away, there, as he said, there wasn't really a plan in place to say, okay, how is this going to continue? And Great Base, some people could call it a resource, but also it's inaction. You know, people are, and I think that's one thing about what we do put on social media is we're perhaps the only, but not too many people, maybe not too people they're doing it successfully, as they're showing young kids hitting a ball better.
Yeah. You know?
With Vic used to say that we should have a plan. And I said, yeah, Vic, this should have been the plan, because he was the pioneer. He was the breakthrough guy. And I said, yeah, Vic, you should have gone forward carrying a flashlight, and I should have gone backwards carrying a hammer.
Yeah.
And Vic would have been finding the new ideas, making discoveries, and I would have been hitting people over the head going, did you get it? Did you get it? You know, that's something with Steve Campbell, who's the director of Wintergreen. You know, I've known Steve 40 years. He was part of this program we had called Tennis Tech. And as I've mentioned, he worked for Braden. And I say something to him and he looks at me and goes, I get it.
Yeah.
With, are you familiar with how that works, buying followers?
Yes, there are a couple of ways. You can straight up on some platforms, just give the platform a credit card and they will increase the amount of viewers through either advertisement. Let's say on YouTube, the recommended page on the right. If you are if you're looking up on something on YouTube tennis related, and you pay a certain amount of money, let's say a flat fee a month, YouTube would on the recommended page will push your video if you paid for that. Same thing goes for stuff on Facebook. You can do Facebook advertising where it's just shared more, and it's not organic. It's people that are just browsing on Facebook, and you you paid Facebook, and they just pop it up like an ad. And you know, stuff like that where it's ads and you pay money so people can see and boost your view count, you can even on Instagram, I'm pretty sure you can pay to have your follower count just artificially increased. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure you can do that. And there are many ways to quote unquote scam, not the people, but the system, so you can boost your rating. But again, in my opinion, anything related to that just veers away from what we talked about, where how organic the Great Base is. And, you know, some people might come on and list this and say, well, you know, that's right, but if your goal as a nonprofit is to help more people, you need to get the word out. You need to grow bigger so you can help more people. And this is a great way if you can, you know, advertise and pay for a little bit of money so you can just spread it more. So there's obviously some discussions to be had, but currently we're not doing that. We haven't done that. And in the near future, unless someone convinces us, I think we should stay that way. Well, I mean, it's up to discussion still, but one more thing here is 500 plus Instagram. It's up to 800 now. It's over 800. So we're closing in on 1,000 sometime soon. Another comment I had to say is with the Great Base, the fact that it is currently a small community, I like how you say we are the smallest tennis community, but we strive to be the best. And with people that do support the Great Base and the following, the organic following that we do have, when you meet somebody and they know the system, they know the program, maybe their kids have gone through it and they really adopted it and understand it, you feel like there's a connection, a sense of connection, a sense of community that just is just formed instantly. It's like just through you as a coach, through other coaches that you've coached, and it's just amazing to be part of. And just from the lens of someone on the outside who hasn't been with you for that long, let's say I've known you for maybe just over 2 years. As somebody on the outside, as a lens, I'd say maybe I'm still a newcomer. It's amazing. Like you meet somebody, oh, you know the pro, you've been in the West, you start talking about the strokes, and it's just a connection, and it's amazing. It's this community that's just been formed. And circling around to, if we pay for advertising and stuff like that, it's going to might be shown to the wrong people. And not saying that it's bad, it's just that spark might get lost, and it could stay there if we just keep it organically growing, just word of mouth and getting bigger. But that's just my opinion.
No, let me circle back on a couple of those comments. It's great. We were just, Yvonne and myself at dinner, because we had canceled this summer at Wintergreen. We do have some people visiting. We had five players and between you, the two other coaches, so mm-hmm. four of us, four coaches. And with Yvonne, he does so many things off the court. Compliment, Steve Campbell has called him a Swiss Army knife.
He called you what did he call you? Just a really sharp knife, scalpel.
Scalpel, hatchet if I have to be.
Hatchet.
With the velvet hammer. But he also uses the term butter knife too. So
yeah,
that could be like, okay, just one dimensional, and there's nothing wrong with that. This is what mm-hmm. you can mm-hmm. do, but you have a skill set where you do windows and floors and everything in between. But I think that also comes back to the term cult. At the dinner table, we had people from Utah, people from Texas, and then Quebec. Mm. And then it's generational. Like, how did they get here? We haven't advertised.
Yeah.
It's just checking.
Amazing.
It's just the phone and the email. And so it goes way back. Here's something that I shouldn't say perhaps, but Andy Fitzell. He's a good kid. He wouldn't do this, but he came up with a great idea. He said, the tennis teaching professional is 90% male. I shouldn't say this because somebody will do it. He said, what should happen is that people should have women wearing bikinis and they're demonstrating great strokes and they're teaching.
That's great.
That would be a way to have a larger following. Coming back to, building the community, we're not being political. Maybe sometimes we've come across where we've been politically incorrect. We're not edifying, playing the name game. I mean, that's amazing how that goes on. You're great, I'm great, we're all great.
Yeah.
And with no internet networking, a lot of these tennis teaching internet gurus, they exchange emails, masses of emails. You give me your emails, I'll give you, and here's a percentage if they have the technical skills to do that. I would say one thing is that we need to be more critical. We haven't been critical enough. Dave Fish, a guest on our podcast, longtime Harvard coach. And then for a long time, he had a lot to do with the UTR. And then for personal reasons, he resigned from the UTR. But he told me a long time ago, he even said, you should call your program Consumer Beware.
That's great.
Consumer Beware. And so what we need to do is take some, it's done with movies, it's done with this, that, and the other thing. Certainly it's done with political candidates, is that someone will, in our world, we could take someone has an Instagram post on the backhand, forehand, and say, okay, let's go through this.
Yeah.
And why,
critique a little bit. Velvet hammer.
The high news, take the high road, not necessarily the road, but the low road, but does it make sense?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I think for many times, consumer beware, if we looked at some of the content that's being shared, I think you could sum it up by, don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Don't try this at home. With.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I like how you touched upon an aspiration. we already are a community, but to become an organization, and you know, even if we are the smallest organization, but aspire to be one of the best. Along that, a side note, I said this previously on a podcast, so I want to come back and add to it, is I really strongly feel, of course, it would be a biased opinion. We like to stay away from opinion, but what we've assembled, the homework, what's been compiled is better than the USTA, the USPTA, and the PTR in this country. And why we feel so strongly about that, it's the pillars. It's being able to take the science from Braden, the balance from Van Horn, the progressions from Vandermeer.
Stats, Jakeston.
Oh, yeah, the different pillars. And I encourage all young pros coming up to join these organizations. I'm a lifetime member of the USTA. 40 plus years, I'm still a member of the USPTA PTR. I was a tester with both organizations. At one point, and I don't know if the record still stands, but we hosted the world record numbers for testing. You know, we would have over 50 people. We did it year after year for a while. But with that, you know, our program can be used as a supplemental program, or it could be comprehensive with. At one time, one of these organizations, they offer points, educational points. And you know, I said, well, okay, like I'd done it before, but many times what happens is leadership and employees change and okay, we got to go back. And you know, again, my work has been on the court, basically in the classroom, on the court, not, you know, trying to, you know, build a business through the internet. But with that, one of the organizations, I said, well, we need to go back and like to have our point or our program count is continuing education. Mm-hmm. And they got back with me and they said, okay, but we want a percentage. I said, well, it's for free. And they said, well, we'll have to get back to you.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you mean? You have to get back to me. It says, you know, will people get, you know, there shouldn't be dollars involved and you're giving something away for free.
Yeah.
We want to remain free. You know, for example, I know that some podcasts have a private podcast. You know, well, if you pay fees for this, what do I know about it? But understand that you can have a private Facebook page and
You can monetize in many ways. A lot of the ways that people generate revenue from podcasts, but people make a full-time living just doing podcasts, and they do it mainly from ads, and they have sponsors and partnerships, and this podcast hasn't had one. We've had some offers, but we haven't had it yet, so we're still thinking about that. We're still in the process of thinking about whether or not to monetize the podcast. Yeah. Probably not.
Here's another point from a business standpoint. A young player that we spent 5 years with, and he's in quite a few of the educational clips we have. And it was just really based on timing that, you know, we certainly going back to Dave Fish, we should film every day. And that's one of the reasons that we're going towards the business side of this podcast is we need to be able to do a better job, and we need people's help, financial help with, Victor Lillo, I would say it's folk heroes of our tech, of our podcast, not our podcast. This is where I have people say brain cramp.
Brain cramp.
Senior moment of the content we have online. But his father's name is Ludmill, and I was his guest. It was a Shark Tank course. And, I told him, I said, well, at one point I was selling this course called Tennis Intelligence Applied. In the first year, made $50,000. The next two, the second and the third year, made $25,000 each, give or take. So $100,000. And I said, well, then I started just giving it away. And the guy looked at me, and I've had this said to me before, but he said, that has to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And anyway, with that, you know, I still feel like, oh, every tennis teacher should do something free. It should, you know, you should not just be regulated by the cash register. And certainly, can you, find time to give a free clinic with, you know, it's certainly always, oh, nothing's free. You're promoting, you're getting people in. And we were years ago, were more successful for well over a decade. We had a clinic every Saturday morning. It's called the Dollar Clinic. And
oh, wow.
We got more people to come to that just because it was called the Dollar Clinic. The funny kid, Mike Costa, he played for one of our students, Craig Tiley, and then he was training with us, and he made a poster that he was walking up and down with this poster. It basically said, it should be 75 cents. It should be 75. And the poster read, it should be 75 cents. And he was walking up and down going, it should be 75 cents. It should be 75 cents. With a goal, though, is if we could have people, the magic number would be $10. If people would make, and certainly people could contribute more. But if we got 1,000 people, and we should be able to get 1,000 people, especially if you go back to generations before, decades before the people that we've worked with. And the people we've worked with know, many people, they certainly know, they live tennis, they just know that so many young kids coming into the game, and it could be, for that matter, adult beginners, they're not getting a good start.
Yeah.
They're getting bad information, they're being misinformed, misinformation, bad information. But if we had 1,000 people at $10 a month, that'd be $120,000 a year. Let me go through thank yous. And I would say the thank yous would be endless. Just, I mean, just on my own, from my own standpoint, you go back to family and friends. You know, just so you go back to lifelong experiences. We talk about the eight pillars, but in that course, tennis intelligence applied, which needs to be redone, needs to be improved upon for sure. I know a number of people now call it 2.0, TIA 2.0.
Yeah.
But it's more than just the eight pillars. And just that course alone, we mentioned over 100 pros.
There's something about the tennis intelligence supply to have here in my notes is the 2.0. It's so many corollaries you can, from the different stories I've heard you give, and you said that the tennis intelligence applied is kind of like Vic Braden's book Tennis 2000. It was remade from Tennis for the Future, and they should just re-release it. Or excuse me, you heard somebody say this. They should just re-release it and just make the pictures new and newer pictures. And it should be done the same, in my opinion, for tennis intelligence applied. The court's still 78 feet long. Nothing's changed. So all the information is still good. It's just on that topic is we should remake it because some of the it was made, I believe, 15 years ago. And the quality isn't the best on some of the videos. It's not as consistent throughout some of the videos. And I've talked with some people, and just the quality of that course in particular turns people off, unfortunately. And if we can remake it, and there's so many things with that is, there are 365 videos in the original Tennis Intelligence Applied, and it's there's so many ideas that go with that and that we can produce with that, such as like Instagram stories, for example. 300 every day, you just post one because they're short, they're a minute long. Some are longer, some get up to 15 minutes, so you just make a clip out of that. But there are so many things you can make out of that. I mean, so many positives where the 2.0 is, it's like on the Instagram, you post it once a day and it just goes reoccurring every year, like just boom, 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 boom. Because what's 1 minute? And to segue, it's unfortunate that the current generation is younger, you know, with these mobile TVs, we have our phones, they've shortened attention span. And kids, especially in the young generation, millennials have gotten caught by this, and especially Gen Z. You know, their attention span, like you said, is an 8-second filter, and they can't sit through a 25-hour course, even though we would like them to, and maybe they even want to. They don't even read books anymore. How are they going to sit through 25-hour courses, even if each video is only, you know, a minute long, somewhere a little bit longer, but it's consumable, but nobody's going to do that, at least in the younger generation from what I've seen. And it's also justified by the fact that you tell me sometimes you get messages how the podcast, keep them long, you know, and you get mixed messages like, you know, you should shorten them. You should keep them longer. And in my opinion, just from talking with players that have been here, that the parents that I've talked to, it's the older, the adults, let's say, they enjoy listening to the podcast. And that's probably the opinion you hear because they got time and they don't have that filter that we talk about that's unfortunately plagued the current generation. And we have players coming in here that, you know, have known about the content for a while, and they do it on their own or they do it with a coach. And they get here and the first thing you ask them, have you listened to the podcast? And they're like, no. And I heard one kid say, oh, is that the ones that are over an hour long? So just that question, just the way they answer that question, it's like nobody's going to listen to them, unfortunately. So that's where we have to do a better job on social media and adapt to the current situation of this generation and be like, yeah, we should be, you know, creating highlights, show notes, clips, putting them out. And that's for the benefit of the youth, because we would like the information to be out there. And unfortunately, that's how it has to be. And Tennis Intelligence Applied 2.0, make it higher quality. And the clips are all there. All the information is there. We just have to get it out there. So the youth, the players, the upcoming generation can consume it.
Yeah, I know Tennis Intelligence Applied. I go with my son, Connor, because he's many of the clips. And obviously as a parent, I go back and go, yeah, it's more than 15, 16. It's getting closer to 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But you're so articulate. But one thing is it's, you know, I guess I could say, hey, young guy, I'm going to correct you on this. It's not the adults, you know, you said got time. They make time. Mm-hmm. The juniors, I mean, that's one thing we're always asking about is screen time. How much time are they on? But no, 100% it needs to be shorter for a certain audience. With, I think, you know, and Andy Fitzell did a great job with these Instagram posts, and we have to go back to that short and sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to put it in time capsules where, you know, when people come here, we just need to do a better job. What do we want to do? We want to do a better job at what we're doing. Is how fast we teach tennis. I mean, the team was just here from high school team from Pennsylvania. It's transformational. Chris Conrad brought a group in, and we have it all documented on film.
Yeah.
This is how you hit the ball. And 4 days later, this is how you hit the ball. And people hear me keep saying the same thing. Yes, guys, the boys team, the operation was a success, but the patient may die. The idea came from Dave Secker. I think it's very important to go, where'd that idea come from and make it a story? So I told Mike McLaughlin that, and Mike McLaughlin and I, we talk to each other all the time. He's SIB, he's a smart Irish bat. Mm-hmm. You may have to audit that. I'm the DIB, I'm the dumb Irish bat. And we were on Vic's staff at the same time in California. And what he's done from that one idea is he's contacted Bill Bruns, who wrote Braden's Tennis for the Future, then they edited Tennis 2000. I think maybe he did all of Vic's books. There's only maybe five or six. Mm-hmm. And so I'm scheduled to be on a podcast with him, and we've got it going where 2024, and that's when Vic first started showing up on PBS. He had it was the fourth TV station. It was ABC, NBC, CBS, and then PBS. They had no commercials. The public broadcasting system, PBS, and Vic did these 1 minute commercials. So yeah. The idea is that here at Wintergreen, where they have the facilities to host it, they have a 50-year Vic Braden reunion. Mm-hmm. But all at the same time, just say, oh, okay, Vic is the Christmas tree, but we have all these other ornaments. And so our critics were saying we're one-dimensional. And this has to be mentioned again, is that Vic's first book was Tennis for the Future, and he was controversial at that point. Well, you close your racket face for topspin. It was 180-degree swing. Shake hands in the backswing, shake hands in the follow through, penny on edge. And with all that criticism towards tennis teaching from the past, at least people were trying to teach. There was a ready position. There was a unit turn. There was a backswing. There was a contact point. There was a follow through. But when you said that, I want to jump ahead in my notes because that's, again, energy makes energy. And it's a great idea. That's what we need to follow up on. We're not short of ideas. I mean, I hear from people all the time. A gentleman who's done a great job with our content, teaching his children. And once they came to us, they never used a tennis. They never went back to a tennis pro, a tennis teacher. That were, as far as I guess distribution or navigation, production, we're not slick, but we're rich in content.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of people there, so much better with, and again, yeah, tennis intelligence applied. I think that overall, the sound is okay. It's like of all our podcasts, I know a great podcast with Carlos Coffey. I think of the 150 plus. And again, to come back to that, I don't know if I said that in the beginning, 156, it's a milestone. This is three years. To go back in my notes here, in asking for money, you know, certainly they have people ask people as well. They have people be a donor, but also have them be a recruiter. And, if someone stops and thinks about the value, and again, just $10 a month, mm-hmm. $10 a month, but ongoing, reoccurring, with, you know, the idea that if people want to give more, yes, we can accept. I think a great thing is worthiness. And repeating myself, we strongly feel that the content that we share is worth $10 a month.
Yeah.
It can be $10 per family. It's not like, well, if you got your husband, your wife, your the husband and the two spouses, and then the kids. Why don't you talk a little about the roster that we...
Yeah, the roster. There's an important distinction we'd like to make between supporters and contributors. And people that support the Great Base, eventually, a little segue is the website. Currently, it's does this function, and it's great. Andy Fitzelf set it up, and it's what it is, and it's great. There's nothing about it, but it could be better, and I'm trying to make it better. Currently, we're trying to update it, give some new pages, some better visuals on let's say different platforms like the phone. I mean, and the desktop view. Not to get too technical, but the distinction between supporters and contributors, there's going to be a new page on the website for the roster. The roster is what Steve was talking about, where if you'd like to contribute financially, it'd be a $10 monthly donation. And I mean, it's not, of course, not mandatory, but if you still like to show your support and say, I support the Great Base Initiative, on the same page, you'll just have some place to put down your name and your location, and we'll try and make it so you'll see yourself as a dot on a map, and you'll see how worldwide the Great Base is, and you'll feel like you're part of community more so. And so that's with the roster page, and we have more pages where we're trying to make another page that's a little off topic, but it's worth mentioning that a commentary page, where that's a great good idea that we had, where people can listen to you commentate over matches live as they're watching the match. They can live listen to you commentate over the match. So that page is done already. We're just looking for a time to sit down and actually do one. So yeah, I mean, it's we're working. It's in progress. But with the rosters, is something you wanted to add, Steve?
Well, one thing with the TV, Brian Wilson. Not Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, but Brian Wilson of Illinois Tennis, who spent time with us years and years ago. He called me out of the blue and said, the match is on TV. You know, and at that time, he had the know-how on how to do it, is to actually commentate. And certainly we could do that with a couple others, but, you know, I think that would be great. I'm drawing a blank. I do this more and more. Senior moment it is a real thing. Name who comes to your mind in this country is a wealthy person.
Wealthy Bill person? Gates. Bill Gates. Yeah, I was going to say, that's the first thing I said. Think I thought of.
Okay, I should have let you answer. But actually, I was just drawing a blank. I couldn't think of Bill's name for 90 seconds. But at one time at Indian Wells, John McEnroe was sitting next to Larry Ellison and Bill Gates. I basically said, I would love to talk to those two guys about how to improve tennis. Even the Great Base backboard, it's been a labor of love. I mean, I have not lost significant money, but I have not made money on the Great Base backboard. But at one point I was like, it wouldn't it be fantastic if Larry Ellison, you know, said, okay, I support the Great Base initiative. And then the more kids can have that upward back, the 45 degree up, the upward angle of a swing. But I think a billionaire is Rob Krychek. Taught me this. If you take a $100 bill and you stack it up 3 feet, it's $1 million. $1 billion goes higher than the Empire State Building. Tennis really needs, you know, I mean, the Great Base. It certainly could, in a dream world, have the help of a Larry Ellison and a Bill Gates. And then I could say, yeah, we could do this and we could do that. But I think asking others to help. Dennis Vandermeer, what an amazing guy, the late Dennis Vandermeer. This is back in the heyday of the tennis boom. And, you know, I can remember, we mentioned it the other day on the podcast or the other week with, we would teach not north and south, but east and west. And on each side, we'd have two, they'd be handmade out of wood. And we would have, in fact, the coach from Kazantinos from Greece said that's what they did at his club, and little kids were playing mini tennis.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the USTA at one point, they had this mission to have 36-foot courts, and it was, all this money was spent. And this, to me, I think the idea has gone away. It's obsolete. And, you know, the old tennis coaches just play from service line to service line.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, to have, so Dennis, you're back in the day in his 70s, his pros would have to call five people a day. You have to make five phone calls. I can remember having, you know, the pros working for a corporation, and I went and I said, okay, and they allowed me to take this large room, and each pro, they had a portable desk, they had their own locker, an office locker, and in that was a Rolodex. And they had to carry a certain clipboard, like when a police officer stops you and gives you a ticket. There's not a clipboard like this. But yet to call people up. And I think that most people would not hesitate, you know, people that have been part of the Great Base and go, yeah, it's worth $10 a month, and then ask other people for $10 a month. With certainly, we don't really have the time. You know, I just still in a position where I'm going to have people come and work with me, teachers, coaches, players, parents, because it needs to be work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have I don't want to be a talking head. When you have people come and you're going to talk to them about teaching tennis, it's best to have some examples there of people that can really hit the ball. We mentioned Vic Braden as being our cornerstone, number one pillar. The information, the most information. He probably in his day was the most misinterpreted tennis teacher. And it's unbelievable that to me that the tennis court is 78 feet long. The string should face at the point of contact. But kids for kids, I think that's a big cornerstone of what we do. Mm. I've got down community service, book reports, show notes. We could come back and talk a little bit about DMP, which was a great effort, but we really didn't have the funding because it was all done for free. Mm. And then the pandemic interfered with that at one point because a lot of coaches, that was their livelihood during the pandemic. So we really backed off on it's the DMP. We talk about that. What are your thoughts on Kids for Kids?
Yes, Steve. So with Kids for Kids, recently we had the organization Great Base Tennis Education certified under a government program called PVSA, Presidential Volunteer Service Award, and it's basically given a status given to nonprofits such as ourselves that can accept volunteer hours from kids, from people in high school that are looking for volunteer service hours. And it's great. I mean, we had a couple of students already utilize that, and they give out awards, and I've heard it's great on applications, and that's not an incentive, but it's more of a call to where, you know, if kids want to contribute and at the same time gain some volunteer hours, like you mentioned, show notes, highlights from previous podcasts. And so Kids for Kids, it's, you know, kids helping other kids as making these show notes, going back to podcasts. So they're learning themselves, finding these highlights, finding these clips, and then sharing them. And that can be done with a couple other things, not just the podcast. So that's great. That's a great opportunity, something we should get on for sure.
With our social media, you know, we haven't really used kids, you know, maybe occasionally first name, but not first name, last name, and not kids holding up trophies. Mm. That's great, but at the same time, we rather have film of kids helping kids.
Yeah.
With, you know, certainly if people are into the Great Base, we have all sorts of stories where our students and our students have held up trophies.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I was moved by, if you guys haven't seen the Facebook post that was posted not too long ago, it was Coach Petrus from South Africa. I believe he sent this video to us of this 10-year-old, I believe. And I mean, it's a 12-minute video, and it just went by like that. And I'm like, it was at the very end. I mean, this 10-year-old kid that was just doing these, I mean, this form is amazing, and it's inspirational. It's just no other word to describe it, but amazing. And at the end, he's teaching another kid, same age. And it's just, that's what the Grace Base is about. It's just,
certainly.
If anyone has seen that, sorry to interrupt, you should definitely see that video. It's on the Facebook. We'll probably post it again. It's a 12-minute video, so I can actually share it on Instagram. And it's plus not my video, but not our video. We can ask Petrus to send a link and stuff. So I'll try and get that out there more, because more people need to see that.
Well, and one thing about Petrus is that he's giving us credit. Mm. Not that we're looking for a thank you or a pat on the back. I know Andy Fitzell for several, I mean, a solid 2 years anyway, maybe a little bit longer, was putting out an Instagram post every day. And then a lot of times people were saying, okay, I like that, but then they're reshooting it. I think the term is bootlegging it.
Yep.
And then putting the same content up as their own.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, it's still sharing. One of our trainees, Raleigh Grossbaum, a young guy who his computer skills are a little better than mine. And he said one time, he goes, no, Great Base, the word is getting out. He goes, you're not getting any credit. So it comes down to the underground.
Yeah.
And congratulations to him. He was just named the head coach at the University of Idaho. Interested in showing kids helping kids. Now, years ago, Vic Braden, and I've said this before on our podcast, Andy Fitzell, other than Melody, spent more time with Vic than anybody in the last 10 years of his life. And they had junior tennis ambassadors. And certainly that could be something, if we raise enough money, that could be possibly returned to the table. But you know, Vic's was about knowledge and about science, and his idea was really in the classroom, you know, to take science and, you know, even elementary kids is, you know, and tennis teachers need that. What are the variables for topspin?
Yeah.
You know, what makes the ball rotate this way? But our world with teaching kids is more, the merry-go-round makes the ball rotate like a Frisbee. The Ferris wheel makes the ball rotate like a bicycle tire. And really, it's simple. It's on court. And it doubles the learning. And it should be a way to make tennis less expensive. And that's where it comes back to what you mentioned about community service. And we realize that tennis players with competitive goals, they don't have that much time. You know, they got to worry about their GPA, grade point average, their SAT or ACT, the Scholastic Aptitude Test.
Yep.
And then also their UTR. But there is time. You can make time. You know, coming back to the question on asking kids about podcasts, you know, I'm not asking that to every kid, but, you know, we recently had someone that we've known for 6 years. Mm. And they get all A's. They've had all A's. I mean, they're just Renaissance kid, and they can't answer questions. So for me to say, okay, you have a very high tennis IQ, there's just different levels of the Great Base. and to have a conversation with someone, and we have to go, where do you get 34 feet? And, you know, they have to know 82 and a half, and they need to know 65.9, and we round off 82 and a half to 83, but 65.9 to 66, that's 17. The ball goes one way, 17 comes back the other, 17. You know, and the true mathematician, myself on Tennis Intelligence Applied, there was a few mistakes for sure, because Mike McLaughlin, he watched it, and we didn't catch it in the editing. I said 69.5. Mm. But, you know, to know tennis math, you know, we say the five S's, numbers for self-management, numbers for strokes, numbers for strategy, numbers for statistics, and then numbers for score. But with the word pitcher method from Don Leary, it works like a charm.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was just not that, it was many years ago. It wasn't too long ago that I mentioned it, but Christo Schultz, we had his father, Bud, on. Christo spent time with us and as an intern, and we sent him to the National 12s, where one of our guys was his site director. And in the National 12s, over 90% of the players had some version of palm up. So tennis is in a crisis. And I talked to someone just the other day. We're going to interview this gentleman, Scott Moore, about pickleball. And pickleball is coming. And that's it. It's like, it's invading our courts.
Yeah, tsunami. It's coming.
You think of Dennis Vandermeer's progressions. That's something kids teaching kids. But for the great bays to work, it has to be at a tennis club. The top person has to say, okay, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. And, really basically in the end, it takes time. It's like with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I would think that Tom Brady has a better understanding of what Bill Belichick does, you know, the great football coach that he played for the New England Patriots. It takes time. It takes time. I've got a couple more things in my notes here. But go ahead. You want to add at this point?
There's one more thing I wanted to add. We have with networking, some coaches, not going to name names, but we have coaches that I've talked to that they give ideas. And one of the ideas, not just coaches and other players and parents that are part of the system and know the program and, you know, are supportive. They would like to see a directory of places where they can go and train with like-minded, probably wrong word, but coaches that have been trained in the system or know the system. And not all coaches are alike. Some have more experience than others, and it'd be great. And this is me trying to give these coaches that I've talked to, trying to say their words out. And I've agreed with it. And I think we've talked about it as well, where it'd be great to have a place, maybe another page on the website where it's, you know, a list of information, maybe contact information of some coaches that around the world, really, that have just, that will give us their information and just put it out there as a community. Like, yeah, this is we're here. So when players do go around, it's like, oh, okay. It's just a way to connect, really. And I feel like sometimes that connection is lost, where you go to a certain state and it's like, well, let me call up Steve, see if he knows anybody. And that's all great. That's how it's been, and it's fine. But what are your thoughts on having like a directory of coaches and that people can look to if they want, you know, on court information?
Well, coming back to the USPTA PTR, back in the days of telephone books, telephone book used to be this thick. I remember doing so much tennis teaching in Atlanta at one point, the ALTA, the Atlanta Tennis League. It was this thick. So many people playing tennis. No, I think connecting people from the past as well. If we could, you know, connect, you know, people that were part of, you know, they may have played tennis, even taught tennis, and they've moved on to something else. But we tell juniors all the time to not be takers, but to be givers. So I think with a directory, though, it doesn't mean that everybody who's been part of the Great Base will be highly competent teaching the concepts. Like Andy Fitzell, for example, is an outstanding technician, outstanding person, outstanding coach. He spent so much time with me of the eight pillars. He spent so much time with Vic, but I remember years ago at the National Teachers Conference, Craig Tiley, who now is very well known as the CEO of Tennis Australia, he was at one time in charge of player development. And before that, he was at the University of Illinois. And I don't think they even have it anymore. The National Teachers Conference, USTA, every year, they'd want to go to the US Open, but there'd be three and a half days of education. But he had a couple young kids on the court, and he basically, people that he didn't really necessarily work for, but I mean, he basically gave a Welby Van Horn tennis lesson. And to me, I just think it's ludicrous. It's just unfortunate that people don't know what the Welby Van Horn balance method. And people just think with us when they think Braden. I remember one time I was teaching at Vic's place, and he sat right on the deck and was watching me teach. And he wanted to know everything about Welby Van Horn. Some coaches are going, "What are you doing?" And I go, "I'm teaching tennis." And it's just the opposite. Vic was like totally into asking me about Welby Van Horn. But it's so simple. No racket, no ball. What do you do with your body? And I just have a couple more points. I think with Wintergreen, it's an outstanding facility to film content. It's not something that is just like happened. Warren Pretorius called Andy Fitzell. Andy was working with me. And then we looked at it. I remember sending in a proposal and basically saying, "Well, if you built three more indoor courts." But since then, they hired Steve Campbell, who's part of our network. And I think this is an outstanding place to film content, not because of the beauty, but because of the observation deck, the indoor courts, the availability at certain times. But I think that's important. I think also, too, is that we talked about this at one time, and I think we can get ahead of ourselves. I really thought with Tennis Intelligence Applied, 365 clips, what should have been done, or what I would have liked to have done, is that 365 different pros make their own clip of that. So you just do the talk about bootlegging and copying something. Yeah. We would have wanted them to, because, and I don't really like the credibility side of tennis. Credibility means you're believable, doesn't mean you're truthful. Yeah. There's a college coach here right now. He has one of his players here, and we're teaching him. And then the coach said, "Steve, why don't you just tell him about some of your players and what they've done in college tennis?" And we don't usually do that. Yeah. Say, "Oh yeah, let me tell you about this guy who was number one and this guy was number one." And those stories, where that's so much how tennis works. To me, that's just a total turnoff. It's to me, it's disturbing. Yeah. But just two more points for me is Jim Klein and Mike McLaughlin called me up the other day, the International Tennis Hall of Fame. Jim, he really deserves so much credit for knocking on doors and making phone calls and filling out forms, paperwork. They have Vic be nominated. They called to inform me that I had been nominated, and Jim Klein, with the help of Mike McLaughlin, and they called, I don't know if it was 50 pros or whatever, they called a large number of pros from what they told me. And they have a category called Builder. Now, I was shocked, and I think so a lot of people would be shocked to know that I would be nominated, because the International Tennis Hall of Fame is basically about pro tennis. It's just about pro tennis. you know, like say for example, the Basketball Tennis Hall of Fame, it's just not players from the NBA. You know, there's college coaches and high school coaches and such. So no, certainly I was honored and it was emotional. But what I'd like to say about that is, I mean, some people would just say it's laughable. And I think that when people hear about this, I think literally hundreds of people will nominate hundreds of other people.
No.
But not many people have built tennis coaches, and tennis coaches build players. Mm. But I do think that in some of my students, I think of a guy named Rafael Fontamora from years ago, or, you know, Craig Tiley, I mentioned him. If people got involved in pro tennis or college tennis, then their work was measured. Mm-hmm. But if you're just teaching juniors, your work's not measured.
Yeah.
You know, you get a junior player up to a certain level, then they go to college, and it's like it's a system that cuts the coach off.
You're a humble guy, Steve. I wouldn't say it's laughable. I think it's well deserved from where I'm sitting. I think it's great, and congratulations. It's amazing.
No, well, thanks. I think it's realistic. A few years ago, there was 9 women, Billie Jean King and the 8 other ladies, I believe it was, that they formed pro tennis by accepting, I think, from Gladys Heldman, $1 for, that was, they just took $1. And because years ago, women's tennis, you know, they were really second fiddle. But I do think great base tennis as an organization, especially if we can get financial help and do a much better job. It's by no means is there a magic pill, there's a magic wand, but a grip of a lifetime, you know, to have a start in tennis where you don't have to unlearn.
Yeah.
To have a good start. And you know, why would people stay with a game? We need to have a movement to, tennis players need to be told, if you learn this way, you're going to be a whiz kid playing pickleball. with that, I just think as a group of coaches working together, I'd say that typical is not the right word. Every day is not the right word. But a normal setting for a tennis teaching pro, they have to, you know, they're concerned about going to the grocery store. They got to pay their bills. Is their lesson book filled? And I do think that if the Great Base became more of an organization and people knew more about the history, the depth, the meaning behind it, you know, it's substance, it's not sizzle, that collectively it could impact the game.
For sure.
I do think and Arthur Ashe said, you know, you can tell a Welby Van Horn student from a mile away. You can right now tell a great base student from a mile away.
Yeah.
And they may not be the kid who's winning the tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only coached so many kids who can palm a basketball, stuff a basketball, and I'm at this almost 50 years. So, and the game's in trouble. You know, you look at what's happened with high school tennis. You look at what's happened with doubles, you know, one up, one back. You know, you look at it, it's a money grab. You know, what does it really take? The consumer, you know, I use the term dumb and dumber, mm-hmm. you know, from the movie. That was a dumb lesson, but it was even dumber that someone paid for it. And I think last thing to talk about is, you know, people would want to know in fundraising, what are we going to do with the money? Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're working lots of hours, and if someone wanted to call me and ask me what you're being paid, I have no problem with that. Because we're still working around the clock. But you know, private tennis teaching, my private tennis teaching is funded anybody who's worked for me with or worked for the Great Base. But basically the goal, I think it's a great goal, is what we want to do is do what we're doing, but do it better. It's not that expensive to share content, but when you think of filming and editing, and I can go on and on about different ideas. And there's people that have raised there's people that have generated, not raised fundraising dollars, but they generated a lot of money through internet education. Mm-hmm. You know, get name pros, give them as much as 70%. And, you know, we're the largest economy in the world, 330 million people, plus the tennis, the game is international. So there's big money that's being made via the internet. You know, I think it's 34 years old now, Braden used to say, and it's so true. So much bad information is going out so fast. There's many young pros. I say, you know, pros, and they're 35 to 45 years old. Some that are younger, they really haven't even taught tennis. You know, it's a consultation. Mm-hmm. They haven't been like a Van Horn, a Braden, a Van Ameer, and others, where they have actually, it's kind of like if you're going to fly an airplane, teach someone to fly an airplane, you should have at least flown an airplane. Yeah. Can you imagine people, you know, I've got this internet program, I've never flown an airplane, but I'm going to teach you how. That's where we are. I mean, it's not bad. It's real bad. Why don't you talk a little bit about what we're going to do with the money? We'll go on vacation and we'll go to the beach.
Yeah, we're going to buy a private jet. We're just going to make it choose a color. We're going to fly it.
You're going to teach me how to surf.
I'm going to teach you how to surf.
That would be unsuccessful.
No, surfing is fun. But with the money, just increasing the quality and quantity of the content that we're producing, quality in terms of things like tennis intelligence applied in the near future, hopefully, things like, we didn't touch base that much on, the DMP program, but we'd like to revamp that, maybe start that up. And that does require some funding it has to be done well, or we would like it to be done better. Just keeping funding for just keeping the great base operational, because with being a nonprofit, there are some, funds that need to be set aside for just keeping it a nonprofit. So I'm trying to keep on top of that. And all these ideas that we have are great, but they need to start being executed, and money makes the world go around. And maybe that's the wrong saying, but it helps. It's tough to do things with, it's tough to do things high quality with limited resources. And not to say we have limited resources, but we could be doing things better, and we should be doing things better. And we're going to try and do our best. We have been doing our best. We're definitely going to try again, like I said, do better. But if you can join along, if you can contribute, help, we'd appreciate that. And thank you for that.
No, it's great. I think, first of all, just to go back, that we really haven't asked, you know, it wasn't too long ago that I helped, we helped a lot of friends in tennis. It didn't take us very long to raise $10,000 for a player.
Wow.
And, but with that, I remember, someone say, well, I don't want to donate money for a player. And, so I think it's very important to, it was $10 per person. And then that's a way, for us to say, okay, this is the size of our organization, you know, that our organization is really running on. And granted, there could be other amounts. But yeah, we're not short of ideas on what to do with, great base. Coming back to Dave Fish, he told me a long time ago, what you should do is just have someone film you the entire day. Well, you know, we don't do that, mm-hmm. But we're in a situation where there's some indoor courts and there's a balcony, and okay, we got to get wired for sound and do certain things. And but then just to take that and then break it down, because, people don't have time to watch, 6 hours of practice, 3 a.m, 3 p.m.
Yeah.
It's just, again, there's many outfits. It's called education, and they're reaching all sorts of people. They're simply doing a much better job than we have, and they have the funds, the manpower to do that. But it's really sad that, again, just coming back to, the different pillars that we have, it's, there's things in tennis that are becoming a lost art, but there's also, I could say, well, like a Vic Braden's in the Hall of Fame, Harry Hopman's in the Hall of Fame, Dennis Vandermeer's in the Hall of Fame with treasures, American tennis treasures. I mean, Mr. Hopman was Australian, but, it needs to be more than a memory. It needs to be more than history. It's not the past. It's to be activated through action. And we have to have, it's not just, again, young kids, but anybody who wants to get involved in the game. Years ago in America, and that's something that I think is not as big as it used to be, is Little League baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never really was connected with baseball, but I played baseball. I mean, if I had to look like a baseball player catching a ground deer or catching a pop fly, never really could hit. I think one of the reasons I had a glove is that as a forward or a defenseman in hockey, when you play street hockey, you'd always want to be the goalie. And it's like, okay, and you wear, back in the day when you'd be a goalie, there's always a baseball glove. And it's like, okay, I'm the goalie. And people are just, 10 feet out slapping a tennis ball at you. And it's like, no mask. And you're just like, okay, I'm going to be able to get, you block it on one side, you catch it on the other side. But the idea is, I'd like to thank everybody for where we are. I mean, we do have, I've said this for a long time. We do have a lot of things in place. Say for example, someone goes to see their accountant. How does it go for an accountant? Perfection is a minimal standard.
Yeah.
So we go to see the accountant. We don't have one shoebox. We've got two. And you have all these papers in the shoeboxes. And I always said, well, one piece of paper says credibility. Another piece of paper says science. Another piece of paper says network. You mentioned, people all over the world. It is international. And then what we need you to do is be able to put that together. It's not put together like it could be. I think really in the end, this is our commercial. After 3 years, our commercial for the Great Bays, and we're not telling anybody that we're going to charge for it. You're going to still be free, but we would like to have people step up to the plate. I think we're on base, but we're a long ways from hitting a home run. And I think the way we can have more swings at the bat is we have to have more people say, okay, they're asking for $10 per month to support the Great Bays. And you think about it, the average price for a tennis lesson now in some parts of the U.S. is $100 an hour.
Yeah.
And
that's expensive.
Money is the topic of this podcast. We're going to continue with year number, I guess we're going into year number four, right?
Fourth year, yeah.
So, anyway, we'll wave to the camera. We'll say adios, amigos. And
adios.
We'll do more podcasts, but thanks for listening to this.
Thank you.